Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What is this nice facility? This is the WCCO studios. Haven't been here in a while. It's been a week. I've been at Target Field for the entire week.
Welcome back.
I know, we're back in business here. Welcome to Lake Night here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Henry Lake, I'm your host, produced by David Josephson until 1 a.m. this evening. And we start with the Minnesota Twins. I've been hanging out at Target Field the entire week other than today. Today I had the, I don't want to say the day off. I was paying attention to the Twins, just didn't make it to the game today. I know that you went and hung out at Target Field today, but not the series that you would have liked. Toronto Blue Jays walk away from Target Field winning the series. That actually was their first series that they won this season. And the Blue Jays win today 7-4 over the Minnesota Twins. And I guess I walk away this week when it comes to Twins baseball feeling as though I'm not down about what took place. I'm not upset. I'm not frustrated. There's no venting that's going to occur here in regards to Minnesota Twins baseball. I think the Twins are fine. But the issue or the feeling that I have is just one of which that I look at this week in this series against the Blue Jays, and I feel like it was a missed opportunity. That's the overwhelming feeling that I have when I sit here and I look at today's game. I look at the loss on Monday, the loss on Tuesday, and me and you talked about this, DJ, a little bit last night on Final Pitch. But the bottom line is that there were winnable games. There were games in which you had leads and you were not able to hold up your end of the bargain. You had some bumps in the road mid game. Your bullpen early on in the first part of the week didn't hold down the fort. Today, Pineda, he just had some struggles and was not able to get over the hump himself. So I really feel like when we look back at this particular series, I feel like it was a missed opportunity. At the very least, I thought that this team was going to walk away with a split in the series, but that was not the case. When we jumped out to the I know that they got a one-run lead earlier in the game today, but when we got to 3-1, I was like, you know what? Pineda's been fine. Things will be fine here for the rest of this game, and maybe we'll tack on a couple of more runs. Well, that wasn't the case. And you can't take anybody for granted, at least at this point in the season. You should never take anybody for granted, but I know that what I was hearing amongst fans was, you know what? We should take care of business against Toronto. They're a terrible team. And look, are the Twins, in my opinion, a better team than the Toronto Blue Jays? Absolutely. I think that we're a better team. But you got to go out there and prove it every single day to make an assessment that you're going to win a series. And I said that to somebody when I was getting on the elevator on Monday. They said, yeah, we should go ahead and get back on track in regards to going on a roll here, because we had won a couple of games and things were looking good and people just thought that we were going to roll past Toronto. That's not the case. These teams this early in the season are not going to lay down, and Toronto's one of those teams.
Yeah, and to me, Tuesday's game, if you remember back then, the Twins ended up losing 6-5, and the last play of that game, Buxton doubles, Crone gets thrown out at the plate, would have been a tying run. That play is a good microcosm of this entire series. The Twins were right there. It maybe felt like we had momentum. We were going to get back and win that game, and they couldn't close the deal. And, you know, that play didn't go our way. That game didn't go our way, and the Twins end up losing 3 out of 4.
But even Monday was a situation in which I thought that the team was absolutely destined to win that game. But then Mejia happened in the eighth inning, and you ended up losing. You end up losing that game on Monday. I think of all of the games I said, this is a game that you gave away or you should have ended up winning. To me, of all the games in the series, it was Monday. That was the night. That was the game. Because we played too well to lose that damn game, and eventually we lost that game. All right, speaking of today and what took place at Target Field, Michael Pineda, he was your starting pitcher. He went 3 2/3 innings, giving up 6 runs on 7 hits.
Today I don't have my best toss, so I'm fighting a little bit when my location. And, you know, so it happens sometimes. My location today is not the best. You know, I'm trying to just grind in the game and try to give you the opportunity my team win, but it's not my best day today.
Not his best day today, and he's pitched actually a lot better than, I mean, today was his worst performance on the season in terms of what he's provided the team. Now, if you want to talk about how far he's gone on the year in terms of innings, he hasn't had a game in which he's went deep in a game, okay? Because he's coming off of the Tommy John, and they're trying to stretch him out. But, yeah, no, he's had better days, and I think that he's going to have a lot better days than what we saw today, or at least you hope that that's the case. But, yeah, no, you're just going to go ahead and just chalk it up to what he just said. He didn't have his best stuff today. When it comes to Rocco Baldelli, the manager for your Minnesota Twins, he talked about Pineda's performance.
Obviously a tough inning, and Mike battled through that inning. I think tonight probably he didn't have all of his pitches, mainly probably his off-speed working tonight, so he pitched mainly with his fastball and tried to duke it out and get through it with mainly his fastball, and he almost did. He made some good pitches. He battled through it, and obviously on a day where he probably didn't have everything working, you know, got us to where he got us, and our bullpen picked us up nicely and gave us, you know, mainly a bunch of zeros. I mean, they kept us in the game, and we ended up, you know, in a ball game still at the end.
And that's what you love in Major League Baseball is when your starting pitcher, you can just tell he doesn't have his A stuff. It's not working. It's not going for him on said afternoon or evening or night or whatever, right? But yet and still, they continue to grind. They continue to battle and give the team an opportunity and a chance to win. Now, that wasn't the case today because 3 2/3, that's not giving your team an opportunity to win. But I just look at today's effort from Pineda. That was a bad start, and I think that he's going to be fine for the rest of the season for the most part. Rocco, he talked about limiting big innings in the future.
We have to limit those types of big innings, and you know, that can come in a lot of different ways. That can come from our pitchers picking us up or us making some plays behind them. So it's just something we're going to have to do.
And I think that that's been the biggest thing that I have paid attention to here in the last week is, or the last 2 weeks, okay? Let me say the last 2 weeks, because let's even go back to on the road against the Mets and on the road against Philadelphia. When it comes to minimizing the damage, that is what our starting pitchers are going to have to do. Our bullpen is going to have to do a much better job, but our starting pitchers are going to have to do a much better job of, when there is an emerging fire, being able to put it out, okay? And being able to get a ground ball that we can turn into a double play or getting that big strikeout. That is what is going to happen for this team to continue to produce a lot more wins than losses. They have not been able to do that, and that's been ultimately, I think, in the losses that has really hurt them, is that things have gotten to the point of, okay, we're on the verge of it getting out of control, and then eventually it gets out of control. And Rocco, he has been quick to pull pitchers this year, but he did talk today about the importance of letting pitchers battle through the tough innings.
Yeah, our guys continue to pitch. At no point do any of our guys ever throw in the towel. Even when they don't have their best stuff, they go out there and battle, and that's all we can ask for. We've had some good performances too that have carried us to some wins as well. So, you know, I talk about guys getting into the flow of what's going on. I think the time is now where you're going to see guys finally falling into their routines and finally getting some comfort in what they're doing.
So it was a frustrating day if you're a Twins fan going to Target Field and watching your squad coming off a nice victory last night, lose today. But there was at least one bright spot for the Twins. Ryan Harper threw 3 1/3 scoreless innings out of the bullpen.
He picks up the whole staff. He picks the whole group up with an effort like that. And he did it efficiently. He got through. He really only went through the order, I think, one time, but was able to cover, you know, all of those innings for us, which is, I mean, it's exactly how you would hope it plays out once you bring them in the game.
All right, so the Twins back in action right here on News Talk 830 WCCO tomorrow evening against Baltimore. We think because it sounds like there's going to be some severe storm. So be paying attention all day long here on News Talk 830 WCCO. All right, coming up next, want to dive into what could be great news for Minnesota Golden Gopher sports fans. We'll get to that next year on Late Night on News Talk 830 WCCO. As we sit here and we look at NBA basketball in a commercial break, Philadelphia's taking on the Brooklyn Nets. All right, first round series tied at one apiece during the fourth quarter. There was something that occurred on the other on one end of the court where somebody was shooting free throws, and they panned to the Philadelphia 76ers bench. And it was interesting because it was Joel Embiid. He's in street clothes because he's not playing tonight with a sore knee. And another one of his teammates, they had their shirts up over their faces or their mouths, whatever, right? Their noses. And we assume here that somebody passed gas on the bench. And I said to DJ, if you're an NBA player and you're sitting on the bench and one of your teammates passes gas, there's nothing you can do. You just got to sit there, right? You can't get up and leave the bench. I mean, because if the coach is going to get ready to put you in the game, he's going to put you in the game. So you got to be prepared. You just got to sit there and just suffer.
I love how much of an equalizing moment that is, as that scene that we just saw looks exactly as it would if those were sixth graders on a bench here at a gym in Minneapolis. It would look exactly the same. Snickers and trying to shield your face. It's just, it's very equalizing.
The two, I don't know if, in your opinion, the two worst places that you could pass gas, to me, the two of the worst places I hate for when people do this, number one is if you get on an elevator and then you pass gas and you get off and you leave people there with that.
Yep.
That's terrible.
You mean best places is what you're saying.
No, worst places. Worst places. And then the other place is, and this is just, I'm telling you, one time I felt like I had to puke, was I was walking past, I was on a treadmill at the gym and a guy walked past me and he just totally, and I'm telling you, I felt like I needed a gas mask. I'm surprised I didn't fall off the treadmill. It was that bad. I had to slow down my pace. I had to slow it down and I doubled over for a second. But those were like the two worst places. But anyway, I don't want to be creeping people out with passing gas talk. But I thought it was funny when we watched it in here and we both chuckled. University of Minnesota Golden Gophers, the athletic program, announced today that they were going to cut season ticket prices for both men's basketball and men's hockey. Okay? And via a bunch of different reports, it sounds like this is going to be, or some of the season tickets, some of them, not all of them, because it's not affecting every single person in the building. But there will be some tickets that will be as low as we've seen back in the 1990s. So when it comes to the reductions, and you can get more information on this if you go to WCCORadio.com. We got a great article up in regards to the ticket pricing. But some people will say, okay, when you look at this, how much sense does this make? I think it makes all the sense in the world. It really does. It makes all the sense in the world. And I think that this is the right call, and I think it's a very smart decision, because when it comes to what they're trying to do, whether it's at the University of Minnesota or any place, it isn't just about the money. Okay, we know that it's about the money, but it shouldn't be just about the money. It should be about the fans and the supporters having a great experience as well at said ticket price. If our teams that we're paying good money to go see aren't playing at that championship level at the moment, and you lower the prices, which they're going to do with men's basketball and men's hockey, it's easier for fans to stomach when it comes to the struggles from time to time. You're going to feel better about your situation if they've lowered the prices somewhat, okay? So now when it comes to the basketball reductions, they are going to be, well, under the new pricing, there's going to be 17 sections at Williams Arena where that are going to have season tickets available for $340 bucks. which is a drop of $190 from this past season. The Gophers also reduced six other sections at Williams directly overlooking the court from $640 to $490. The men's basketball team has a 14,625 seating capacity at Williams Arena, but average announced attendance has been thousands below that for years. The Gophers averaged 10,774 for home games this season, down from a little bit under 12,000 1 year earlier, but up from the 10,309 they drew 2 years ago. So it's been kind of fluctuating, kind of back and forth with the attendance. In regards to hockey, the men's hockey team average announced attendance was close to 10,000 capacity for years. That number, okay, when it comes to 3M Arena at Mariucci, was at 9,595 as recently as three seasons ago before dropping. Now, listen to these figures for the last couple of years. 8,726, and this past season, 7,944. So it's really affected the men's hockey team a lot more. When it comes to men's hockey, five of the 24 sections will have season tickets starting at $500, which is $200 less than the price charge for those seats 2 seasons ago. The Gophers also reduced four other sections from $800 to $700. I think that this is a great call. I really do. Because I would rather have you reduce the prices some and have more fans attend than to have the prices stay stagnant and stay where they are and fans just not showing up. Let's create that environment. Let's create that experience. Let's go ahead and get this thing jump started again. Okay? Let's let the fans be a part of something special. And we all talk about building something, right? Building something special when it comes to sports and athletics and the different programs. And to me, one of the things that you want to do is always have a good experience. And that, to me, is what we're trying to do here. Okay? Now, there are some people that they're not going to see the price dropped. Okay? That's just the reality of the situation. Some of the better seats in the building, they're not going to go down. Okay? Just because, well, in essence, they won't go down. Because what will happen is that they will drop the price maybe per the ticket a little bit, but you're going to have to pay a little bit more for the – there's a specific fee, and I can't recall it right off the top of my head, that you actually have to pay to be in the good seats, and that's essentially not going to change at all.
Yeah, I think it's labeled like a gift.
Yes. 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 I can't remember the specific name, but that's essentially what it is. It is a gift. And that so those people in those seats, and I talked to a couple of friends. I asked them, was their ticket going to be discounted or was it going to be cheaper this year? And they said no. They said that's not going to be the case. So it's not across the board discounts for everybody. But I do like the concept. Do you like the fact that they're going to drop and lower the price for several sections, both with hockey and with basketball? I do like this.
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, it's like a supply and demand kind of thing, and it's better to have the chairs filled than not filled, even if you're making a little less revenue. The deal where they charge you one price, but then they sort of raise another price, I guess it's similar to like the seat license deal.
Yes.
You know, maybe the pricing is different, but it's like
the PSL situation. Yes.
Yeah, but it's like when you get your phone bill. It's like, well, what's the real price? Is it this plus this and the taxes and fees?
What's the fees?
Yeah.
What's the insurance?
Can we not call it a gift? Can we not call it a whatever? Like, tell me how much I'm going to pay for my tickets and don't.
And that's it.
Yeah. Don't make it a surprise. If you're going to raise them, raise them. If you're going to lower them, lower them. And in this case, it seems like lowering is the right idea, but don't lower them and then raise something else to make it right.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
I'm with you. All right, coming up next, one of the big stories from yesterday around Major League Baseball was the bat flip that everybody saw that occurred in Chicago between the White Sox and the Kansas City Royals. Well, Dave Mizutani of the Pioneer Press, he's going to join us. He had an article today with some takes with some members of the Minnesota Twins who had different views of the situation. We'll talk to Dane, and we'll do that next year on Late Night on News Talk 830 WCCO. All right, make sure you're listening at 11 o'clock tonight. We're going to talk to Bleacher Report's Danny Nobler. He's got a book out, And what he's talking about, unwritten rules, bat flips and just having fun and the new school stuff that's going on in Major League Baseball, which leads us to our next guest, because he had a great article today for the Pioneer Press, Dane Mizutani, in regards to catching up with some members of the Minnesota Twins about the bat flip that everybody was talking about yesterday with the Chicago White Sox and Kansas City Royals, and we had the benches clear and all of that. Dane, I love the piece today, man, and it was interesting because in the mix there, as you had a conversation with several members of the Minnesota Twins, it seems like the clubhouse was torn on this issue, right?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on, Henry. But like you said, I think that's pretty accurate. There's some people that still really subscribe to that old school, like, respect the game, don't show up your opponent. And then, you know, I talked to Jonathan Scope, twin second baseman, and he wouldn't flat out say, you know, I'm pro bat flip, but he said, like, the game gets emotional. The moment dictates what you're going to do. And, you know, he said, I won't say it. I'm never going to do it because maybe one day I'll be in the moment, I'll hit a big home run, and I'll flip the bat. You know, it's just, it's like this old school versus new school way of thinking, and it goes all the way back to, like you kind of mentioned, those unwritten rules of baseball and where do they apply and where is the line. And, you know, it's just, it's constantly crazy to me. You know, if you're one of the best players at what you do, one of the best people in the world at what you do, and you beat another person at what they're one of the best people in the world at what they do. And if I launch a ball 400 feet, I'm going to throw the bat 100 feet in the air. Like, it's, you know, it's just crazy to me that something as simple as throwing a piece of wood can make someone so mad at the end of the day.
Yeah, I'm with you. And see, me personally, I don't have an issue with it. To me, it does show personality. And we see it from time to time with different individuals. We saw it a few years ago with Jose Bautista and the famous bat flip that he had in Toronto. We've seen it with Bryce Harper. He had a bat flip towards his old team to start off the year. So I don't have an issue with it. And it's funny how, and it comes across as a little bit hypocritical for those that are anti it, because Major League Baseball has this campaign. They've used it for the last couple of years. Let the kids play. And to me, this is part of the new school kids' style of playing.
Exactly. You said it right there. Let the kids play. And it's so weird that that's the slogan, the campaign they've rode with for the last couple of years. And, you know, maybe it is the MLB wanting to let the kids play, and it's these teams policing themselves almost for no reason, you know, just because that's how we've been brought up. That's how we've been taught. You know, if someone flips the bat, you got to come up the next time that they're up at the plate, and you got to throw behind them. You got to hit them in the leg. You know, it's just crazy to me that, you know, if a pitcher, I was talking to Trevor May today, and he said it would be the same as if I were fist pumping every single time I struck someone out. And I countered, you know, why don't you do that?
Yep.
And he said, well, it would be showing up the bat. You know, I just think it does come across, and I do understand respecting your opponent. But at the end of the day, you're trying to beat those dudes. So if you beat them and you celebrate and they get mad, I just don't see why that should really matter.
At the
end of the day, I'm trying to beat you.
Yep. I'm totally with you, Dane. And we're talking to Dane Mizutani from the Pioneer Press here. His article today, is there a place for bat flipping in baseball? Twins players have different views. And you just brought up Trevor May. He seemed to me in the article that you did, he was the most outspoken that was against it, okay? And I get it. You know, he's a pitcher, and he's going to be a guy that's not going to want to be showed up and all of that. But like you mentioned, you said that he could, if he wanted to kind of give a fist pump. We do have pitchers that do that. Max Scherzer is a guy that when he's on the mound, he does that a ton. So I just, right. I think it comes across as hypocritical for pitchers to go with that line and say that against batters when we do see pitchers from time to time get excited, get vocal, and I don't get upset with them when they do that. When Clayton Kershaw gets excited because he strikes somebody out, I have no issue with that.
Right. And one of the things, you know, just talking to people in the clubhouse today that kind of got me a little bit confused is like, it was like, well, the moment will dictate it and you'll know if it's wrong. Well, if I, in that moment, think that the moment calls for me to, you know, and Tim Anderson yesterday, like, let's not get it twisted. He was not, I don't think, at least from my perspective, was not showing up the pitcher. He looked directly at his dugout, he yelled, and he threw the bat at his dugout, and then he promptly ran the bases. You know,
yep.
The pitcher, if that's what gets him so mad, then just don't give up the home run. He won't be able to throw the bat if you didn't give the home run up. So it's just, 50. Like, the moment, it just sounds like something, you know, like a cop-out. Like, well, you know, it's okay if Joey Bats does it because it's in the ALDS.
Yes.
Well, if I want to do it in the fifth inning of game 42 because I just hit a big home run, like, why not? It's just like, let's just let it happen.
I think the most confusing line to me of all the lines from May in your article today was, he says, quote, "There's a pretty clear line I draw in the sand. It's not even about guys having fun or guys respecting the game or whatever. It's about respecting the opposing team." And that to me is where I guess to me the gray area is what qualifies as disrespect. And see, and to me, that's the part with Major League Baseball that it's going to be hard to, like, I don't think that disrespect or showing respect is the same across the board in terms of everybody's mind. And that's the problem that we're going to continue to have year in and year out.
You're 100% right. Because, I don't know, in Tim Anderson's mind, maybe he was really trying to disrespect the pitcher. But if I'm guessing, it's not like he was throwing that bat, flipping it to the dugout, because he was trying to show just some disrespect. I think he was trying to get the team going. I think they were at home. You know, the fans like that. Like you said, I mean, it's a new school, a new age, a new generation of people. And if you want to tap into that market, sometimes, you know, just following the unwritten rules and being quiet and hitting a home run and kindly trotting around the bases, that's not as fun. Like, I want to see emotion out there. I want to see, like, that this game matters because there's 162 of them. Why should I care about game 38? You know, like, well, because it matters to these guys. And, yep. And things like that show that it matters. Whether it's disrespectful or it's viewed as disrespectful, honestly, I just think that's you know, not my problem. If I'm Tim Anderson, that's not my problem. If you think that's disrespectful, just don't give up the home run in the first place.
Hey, last thing I got for you, Dane, because I don't feel like I got any clarity in regards to when I looked at your article was awesome, but I didn't get any clarity in regards to manager Rocco Baldelli. I know he's a new manager for the Minnesota Twins, and he's kind of a new school guy, whatever, but it seemed as though, like, maybe he left you kind of unclear about what his stance is in regards to all of this.
Yeah, I think he was playing his cards close to his chest. If just reading between the lines, I don't think he's a big fan of it. I think he is very into the new school, the new culture, the new age of baseball and analytics and, you know, the opener and all that. But I think he still does subscribe to the let's respect our opponent. And you know what I mean? That's totally his deal. If that's what he wants and the way he wants to operate, the way he wants to run the team, if he doesn't want his clubhouse flipping the bats or whatever, that's the vibe I got from him. He didn't come out and say, you know, nobody on my team will be bat flipping. He didn't say anything like that. He kept it very close to the vest, probably not necessarily surprisingly. But he did, you know, say, I do think that there is room for fun in baseball. So it's almost like he's towing this line of, well, I grew up and I learned that I need to respect my opponent, but I also want my players to have fun. So, you know, almost like he's trying to allow himself to let his players have fun, to be okay with the bat flip and things of that nature. So he didn't come out and flat out say which way he leans one way or the other. I think he's still trying to figure it out. He said it's a long discussion, one that we could probably have. You know, someone's going to flip the bat in a couple weeks here, and we'll be talking about this all again. So.
Exactly. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Dane Mizutani. Dane Mizutani from the Pioneer Press. I appreciate the time, my man. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
No problem, Henry. Anytime.
All right, take care. That's Dane Mizutani joining us here on Late Night. Hey, coming up next, the NFL schedule was released yesterday. There's two things I want to get into. Number one, there's a great article from Jeff Schwartz, former NFL player, in regards to how players view the NFL schedule as opposed to how we do as fans. And also, there's one thing I never do when the schedule is first released. We'll get to that next year on Late Night. All right, back with you here on Late Night News Talk. 830 WCCO, Henry Lake, David Josephson, till 1 o'clock. A lot of people yesterday excited about the National Football League and the schedules being announced. We went through the schedule a little bit yesterday, real quick, real brief, told you who the opponents were when it comes to the Minnesota Vikings. We didn't really get into the particular dates and times. There were a couple of them that we went through early on, but we'll get back to that at some point. But the I found an interesting article from Jeff Schwartz, who is a really good media member when it comes to being a former athlete and a former football player. Okay? He's done some really good work the last couple of years. Offensive lineman that retired, I want to say retired now 3 years ago from the National Football League. But there's an article up, SB Nation, and I like the way that he goes about it with his article. It's entitled, Six Things NFL Players Care Most About When the New Season Schedule is Released. And Schwartz says there's a difference between what the players look for and what the fans look for. Okay? Because yesterday, what did everybody do? What did every fan do? Every fan looked at the schedule and they evaluated the schedule and said, okay, my team's going to play this team. This is going to be a good game. This is when they're going to play. And I'm going to go ahead and put together wins and losses, right? That's what everybody does. Everybody does the win-loss thing right now. All right, couple things before we even get to the article. One thing I never do, because DJ, you asked me this earlier. You said, did you look at the schedule? Did you come up with a prediction in regards to wins and losses? And you said that you saw some people that had put the Minnesota Vikings on like 10 wins or whatever. This is one thing I don't do, okay? And I will say this, and this is not calling anybody out because I don't even know what predictions people made, okay, in terms of wins and losses. I don't know. I don't know who did what today or yesterday. But let me say this. This is just my thinking on the issue of wins and losses right now. It's dumb. It is absurd to do win-loss record right now. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you are the coach. I don't care if you are a scout. I don't care if you are a talk show host. I don't care if you're a play-by-play person for a team. You don't do wins and losses right now with any football team because we haven't even had the draft. How can you do wins and losses and we don't even know what the makeup of the roster is? There are going to be veterans that are going to get cut in about a month. We got the NFL draft is a week from tonight. So how can we put together wins and losses and we don't even know who the potential rookies of the year are going to be, who the impact rookies are going to be, who are going to be the bust? So if we're talking about rosters, the rosters aren't made up yet. So let the if we're talking about wins and losses 2 weeks from now, I get it. Because then you know who's got a new quarterback, who's got a new left tackle, who's got a new shiny new toy at wideout when it comes to a rookie wide receiver. Or that great defensive lineman. But to do wins and losses right now, and we haven't even had the NFL draft, to me is absurd. It's dumb. If anybody out there said, I predicted the Vikings got 10 wins or 11 wins, or they're going to go undefeated, that's just dumb. That's just dumb. Because we don't even know what the hell they're going to do in the draft, or any other team for that matter. Okay? Let's get back to Jeff Schwartz. He says that these are the things that players care about when the schedule comes out. Number one. And I totally understand this. When is the bye week? The players want to know when the bye week is. It's important. And as a fan, I'm sure it's different for me as it is for players, clearly, because they're looking at something totally different. But I've always liked the bye week to be like right in the middle. Right? Now, I don't know how players view it. I think some players don't really care about when, in particular, the bye week is. They just need the bye week. But he states this. Ideally, a bye week is in the middle of the season. So he agrees. He that's typically where they want to have it. He says the bye week is important because it's often a much-needed break, not just a physical break, but a mental one as well. Training camp is a grind. Then the season starts, and it's Groundhog Day. Wake up, go to work. Most players are at the facilities on off days. You're putting football ahead of family and other obligations. He says the bye week allows for a breather. So the players like when the bye week is in the middle of the season. Point number two that he brings up, the Thursday night football matchup. He says that that is something that players look at. And why? He says it's a mini bye week. He says hopefully we can get Thursday night football in the bye week equally spaced. I always enjoyed having Thursday night football earlier in the season because my body could recover quicker. That's interesting. Because it comes across as like it's a bye week.
Yeah, and that's just, I mean, all of this makes sense. A bye week and Thursday night football because, you know, what am I doing at this time of year? I just did this week. I'm taking a look at my summer. I'm figuring out what weeks I can, you know, take a break from my role here and get out of town and just, and you know, whether it's out of town or staying here or whatever.
I'm doing the same thing.
Doing something different. We're scheduling out. And for all of these NFL players, they don't get to decide that for 6 to 8 months of their year, probably closer to eight or more. They are told where to be and when to be, and there's just these few little blocks of time in there that they get time off to go see family or relax or whatever. So, yeah, absolutely. You're excited to figure out when that is and maybe book your place or tell your family or whatever.
And remember what he said in here. He said that even on off days, guys are at the facility. So it's almost like you're not even getting an off day. You're actually having to be at the facility for the most part. Number three, he said the other primetime games. Who doesn't love playing under the lights? These are the games the whole country is going to watch, including your family and friends back home. They all get to see you in a standalone game. So, yes, he says primetime games are what guys, when that schedule comes out, they want to know when it's showtime, when they can go out there and say, you know what, we're going to play on Sunday night football, or we're going to play on Thursday night football, or we're going to play on Monday night football. That matters to players, and I get it. Number four, games that are personal for the players. He says, after looking at the schedule for bye weeks and primetime games, it's now time to get into the details, like whether you're going home to play in front of family. He says, I was released by the Giants in 2016, so this wouldn't have mattered, but it's a funny story anyway. The Giants were playing at the LA Rams. My parents live 11 miles from the Coliseum, and it is the shortest distance they'd have to travel to a game. But this game was in London. He said, my parents would have flown 5,400 miles and spent thousands on a trip to watch me play instead of driving down the highway. So the personal games, like when you're at home, where you grew up and all that stuff, whatever, that matters to them as well. And the couple final points that he brings up in the article, who are you playing opening week? He says, like I said above, we take things week to week, but now we can actually visualize the first opponent and get fired up, which makes a whole lot of sense, right? Everybody gets fired up for week one. Week one is just different from week 10 from the respect that if it's just a regular Sunday game in week 10, you're probably not going to be as excited unless, like, there's a division race, it's a rival, something like that, and it's not a primetime game. Last but not least, cold weather games. He says he loves the sunshine, but he's always paying attention when it comes to bad weather. So those are the six items. Jeff Schwartz. Love the guy. We got to get him on the show this year when it comes to National Football League stuff. We'll definitely try to make that happen. All right, coming up next here, top of the hour, we're looking to have a surprise guest, a big announcement made today in regards to media. We'll get to that next year on Late Night News Talk 830 WCCO.